anxious to step through the gate again, Major?
Yes, I am.
We all are.
Would you like us to bring back anything special?
No, thanks.
Groceries, new outfit, flatware?
No. Just yourselves in one piece, please. Dial it up. You're safe.
Welcome to the Jumping Puddles podcast. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and or YouTube. And follow us at Jumping Puddles Podcast on Tumblr and Instagram, and Jumping Pud Pod on Twitter. If you want to support our podcast, please check out our Ko-fi. Hi, I'm Sam, and with me are my fellow co-hosts, Tor and Ash.
Hey.
Hi.
And today we are discussing Season 2, Episode 19, Inferno. On a planet named Tyrannus, the Atlantis expedition encounter an ancient outpost currently used by the Tyrannians to protect themselves against the Wraith. However, the outpost's use of geothermal energy awakens the planet's supervolcano, which is set to blow any minute.
Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun. We tried to time it.
Yeah.
Lots of tension in this episode. Definitely deserved a dun-dun-dun after that summary.
Absolutely, yeah.
We are back. It has been too long since we recorded. Everyone's like, where you guys been? No one's asking us that. But I'm like, what if they are? If you're thinking it, don't worry. I got you. I read your mind. We've just been super busy. But we are back with the penultimate episode. Which is a rather strange penultimate episode, if I have to say so myself. We can honestly just start there. Let's just get this right over with. What a weird place for this episode. I
was just going to say, I mean, like, having all the episodes that came before in mind and how often we discussed that none of them really fit, I don't really think it's super surprising that this one maybe is also a bit... Actually, I don't think I thought it was too out of place there. I liked how it tied... We're jumping right to the end right now, but like how it tied into the season finale, and like how it built that up and how there was like this whole thing happening like within the episode with like the planet like blowing up basically. And then like far, far away, there was already this impending doom of the Wraith reappearing and like heading towards Atlantis. So I did quite like it. But yeah, also it's been a while since we discussed the last episode. So
I think where it was strange for me was because it's the penultimate episode. I don't know. I just feel like it was a little bit too convenient that they just happened to stumble upon this Tyrannian planet with this ancient warship that they can now use against the Wraith that just happened to be incoming right now. Like, maybe if this episode took place a little bit earlier on in the season, but not too close to Aurora, because I think that was the issue. Like, they didn't want to have, like, two ancient warship episodes so close together. But it just felt like so, like, oh, isn't it lucky that we just went to this planet that had an ancient warship? Because now the Wraith are coming. Other than that, it was a fun episode.
Yeah, I think for me, what makes it out of place is that I just feel like it's so easily forgotten, kind of. Because it's, you know, in the middle of two great episodes. Mm. Well, I don't remember the finale, so let me not say great. But, you know, two important episodes, right? You have the introduction of Michael, who's, like, such a huge villain later on in the show. And then this episode. And then the finale. So it just kind of feels like, I don't know, because I think this episode is very underrated. I think rewatching it was so much fun. And I just feel like it gets ignored because it's in between, and I also feel like maybe people think it's, like, a part one, kind of, right? Because last season they had, like, three parts, you know, right before. and it led into season two. So I don't know. I feel like maybe this would have should have been better a few episodes earlier as well. But I mean, whatever. It's still great. It's just random, I feel like. And I just feel like it deserves more attention than it gets.
Absolutely. I could be mistaken, but I feel like when we were watching season one, we were discussing, I don't know if it was on or off the record, but I think you two were talking about this episode and you were like asking me what I thought about this episode, and I like couldn't remember it at all. Like, it just, I couldn't remember. And I rewatched it, I think, because you two were like, I think I seem to remember that you two liked this episode. And I think I know why now after rewatching it. But yeah, I absolutely agree with you, Sam, that I also think it's a really good episode, and I think if you take this out of context from the show, I like just look at it from like how you write maybe a TV episode, it's and how you then like produce it. It's really good. Like, it has so much tension. I think I was the whole time I was just sitting on the edge of my chair basically, because there was so much happening and it was so fast paced that it was a great tension, like, overall. And yeah, I really liked that.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because Tor mentioned Aurora, and I was gonna compare it to Aurora, not in like the story sense. I mean, I guess you can make the comparisons because of like a warship, you know, but I was just thinking in a sense that I think Aurora is like a perfect filler episode for the show. I honestly think like Inferno is also just another like fantastic filler episode. It sort of hits all the marks that I think you would need for a filler for this like franchise especially, right? Like, gives you the tension. There's so much comedy. There's some really underrated scenes in this episode. But it also expands the world, which is something that, you know, we've all, me especially, been screaming about for this season. I feel like it finally delivers on showing us, like, new people and, like, a new setting, you know, a volcano, something we haven't really seen before. And in the end, they get a warship out of it. So, tens all across the world, kind of. Not to jump the gun, but...
Yeah, and, like, I'm sure we're going to discuss this later, but, like, often filler episodes, like, not in a negative sense at all. I think that's clear from, like, previous episodes, that filler episodes are very important. But, like, I feel like often filler episodes, in quotation marks, are kind of, like, very A and B plot focus, and, like, they're, like, a few characters go there and do that, and other characters go to the other place and do a different thing. But in this case, they all kind of came together, and they had, like, the whole team there, and they had also, like, hey, Carson in there, which is, like, as, like, just part of the team and, like, doing actually medical stuff, not war crimes. They had Elizabeth in there doing shit. They have even, like, Zelenka showed up, and Chuck showed up, and they had Skinner. Caldwell, that's his name. And, like, they had all these characters that are always in the background and show up here and there. They all kind of came together. And that was another thing I really appreciated about this episode.
All right, fuck it. Let's just start with Elizabeth. we discuss her plot. It's weird, because I do feel like season one Elizabeth was obviously, like, utilized better. Right? I just feel like she was present in the show and her role just suited her. Like, it fit to have her in almost every episode and to have, like, John, you know, coming up to her and, like, asking these questions. And so to kind of see her sort of just disappear this season has honestly just been, you know, annoying. We've talked about it at length. None of us are happy with that decision. But in a weird way as well, though, I do feel like season two Elizabeth just feels more assertive. I don't know, I just feel like some of my favorite, like, lines and some really good moments of her just, like, you know, talking shit back or, like, just not taking anything are in season two. And I feel like that's very, you know, I just want to highlight that because I think we get so many great Elizabeth clapping back scenes in this episode. And again, yeah, she's off base. And the crowd goes wild.
Was that, I could be mistaken again, but was the last time she was off world in Condemned?
Epiphany.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Okay. No, this episode, like, for her, it's amazing. I was so happy when, like, the first scene with her already, when she's talking to John, is just, it's so funny. It's just hilarious. And with the whole, oh, yeah, I liked that scene because both of them were excited about, like, different but also the same thing. Like, John was really excited because, oh, yeah, there's a warship and we can get, like, a warship. And Elizabeth was really excited about, like, also the warship that was, like, great because, like, she had, like, the overview of, like, everything and, like, they need to defend themselves and everything. But also, like, about making new alliances and having some cultural exchange, which is, like, something that she really, that's really important to her. So I was really, really happy to, it was really nice just to see that and, like, to have them on, like, a similar level. And, yeah, not butting heads for once, maybe. And then later, just, there's a scene when John says, oh, he should get back because, like, Rodney is a bit, like, because of the lead scientist and everything. And Elizabeth is so funny. And, like, she reads him so well. She knows exactly what's going on, like, off planet. It's so funny. And then she says that she should go off world as well and, like, just, like, join the mission and, like, negotiate. I was like, to go off world.
Yeah, that good scene stuff. Is great on so many levels, banter-wise and just character-wise for Elizabeth especially. I feel like she gets mischaracterized a lot because she's the leader of the city as being, like, a hard ass or, like, a stick in the mud. But she's so funny and so, like, she's like, maybe I should go to this planet and see if there are any hot guys there, too. Because you guys are finding some hot scientists. So, like, oh, let me go check out the people on this planet myself. And you're just so, like, playing along. And just so fun to see her have fun.
Yeah, it's so nice just to see her be able to lighten up and, like, be a character. Like, she doesn't have to just be, like, super serious and, like, just reciting, like, the most boring, like, lines that, like, you know, anyone, you know, can say in command, basically. I love when she just gets to show off, like, her personality and, like, just Tori gets to, like, have fun with it. And I just feel like you could always just feel when the chemistry is bouncing off the characters, regardless of who she's talking to. It's just, like, it's always there.
Yeah, and I feel like, in terms of Elizabeth, it sets her apart from, like, the Landry sort of type of leadership and, because those guys had fun, but I feel like it was more of, like, a long-suffering or father figure sort of character. And, like, this character is a youngish woman leading this city. So she's going to have, like, a different style, a different approach, a personality, you know. Like, this is not some old white guy leading a military expedition. So it's cool.
Also, she kind of Elizabeth keeps threatening people, even if she says she's not threatening people. Like, Sam, what you said earlier, that some of her best scenes and, like, her talking back to people are in season two. That's definitely true. Also, I'm thinking again of Condemned, where she's, like, talking to the magistrate or whatever, and she's threatening him very, like, he was like, oh, was it a threat? And she was, yeah, I thought it was obvious, basically, in this episode. She's like, not to threaten you, but we could already destroy you if we wanted. We have the power. We don't need your warship for that. We can do it already. I was like, girl.
Facts.
I love confident Elizabeth. Let's just keep this energy. It's so fun. And I don't know, I just feel like this episode just, like, highlights, like, all of her best qualities, which is kind of funny, I guess, that it comes right after Michael, which I feel like, obviously, was not some of her finest moments as leader of Atlantis. I wrote down, I was like, I forgive her for the war crimes in this episode. I, like, she's cute. She's allowed to commit a few experiments. Like, she can do that.
As a treat.
As a little treat. I think she deserves it. Because I think she was so sweet just, like, inviting the people, like, immediately back to Atlantis. Like, okay, trust. I don't know. I think it just, like, shows, like, her kindness as a leader. And again, it just shows, like, who she is as a person as well, that she was just so eager to jump to their aid. And she didn't know anything about them. Like, she really did not know. They're just like, we live in a volcano. And she was like, all right, you're coming home with me.
Yeah, and she even offered, like, when they were, like, her trust was not really reciprocated. Like, the guy did not believe her. And he was like, no, you're gonna try to fucking rob us or whatever. But, yeah, not only did she invite them to, like, seek refuge in Atlantis, but also she offered that they could stay there if they wanted in Atlantis. Which is like, wow, that is like, wow. Wow. Like, they didn't have to, but it was just an offer that she like, put into the room.
She handled it with a lot of grace. Even when he apologized, she was like, you don't have to say sorry. Like, I get it.
I think I see where the...
Tyrannians? I think that's how they pronounce it. Tyrannians?
Yeah.
Was it like a long A or a short A? I never remember.
I'm not sure. Okay. So I think I get them. Like, there are these people coming in and saying, so, hey, you have some cool stuff here. And maybe you can help us. And, oh, there's a warship, which we would like. And then they say, oh, now you have to leave. So, I think I get how that can be a little bit suspicious. But yeah, I did like how it again showed us Elizabeth's like humanity and also her trust in her team, because like Rodney was telling her about like, oh, this planet is about to blow. Maybe we should leave. And she heard that, and because she knows Rodney, she knows she can trust him. Or she trusts Rodney like completely, and then I think they all just tried to do the best with what they had at hand and like trying to see the whole picture, which neither of them could really, especially the Tyrannians. But yeah, it was handled really like gracefully, I feel like.
Yeah, and there's that really cute little scene of I think the whatever his name, the angry old man, like drinking in his room, and then Elizabeth coming in, and I love that she just says like she trusts Rodney. I forgot exactly what she says, but basically she just says that she trusts Rodney, and I was just like, Rodney, Elizabeth crush, let's go. She trusts Rodney.
Yeah, and BFF. Like, she's not afraid to say it. Like, she says it without hesitation or like any sort of joke. She's just like, yeah, I trust his advice.
Literally gorgeous. Literally gorgeous. And one last thing on Elizabeth for me. Any scene where Elizabeth is, like, standing on the Atlantis balcony is just, like, immediate 10 out of 10. 10 out of 10 scene.
Absolutely.
She belongs on that balcony. It just, there's something so magical about seeing her on there. Like, you just feel an emotion that I don't even know how to put into words. It just feels like that's her home. Like, she, like, that's her porch swing. She's looking out into the sky and just, like, relaxing on her porch. Like, it just feels so right. Obviously, I love, like, any of her scenes with, like, John on there or, like, this guy, this random guy was fine, too. But just her alone on that balcony.
Yeah, and I'll never get enough of her saying that the team is her people. Even when it's just the team on the planet. Yeah, there's something special about that.
Yeah, it was kind of funny that when the guy said, yeah, I have my people are still back there, and it was like 2/3 of his people were still on the planet or something. And she was like, I have people there too. And it's like 3 guys or 4. Like, she's right. And I love her for that, but...
And I don't know if we should talk about it now because it's at the end of the episode, but... Because you were saying, we're talking about Elizabeth and Rodney. I really like that moment at the end of the episode when they're discussing what they have in terms of defense against the hive ship that's coming their way and what'll happen if there are more. And Rodney's very doom and gloom, like usual, and saying, that's not enough stuff. Like, that's not going to cut it against a bunch of Wraith. And Elizabeth very calmly is agreeing and saying the negative thing that Rodney just said. But, like, it pans back to Rodney's face. You know shit got real because, like, the devastation on his face. Like, when Elizabeth says it, you know that it's true. So, yeah, I don't know. That was just really impactful. A very impactful scene.
I love the last scene, though. And I love the last line, which is Elizabeth saying, oh, it's all we got. So it's not really hopeful, but it kind of feels like a little bit hopeful. Or at least it feels like she hasn't given up yet. And, like, she knows that, again, the odds are 1 billion to 1. That they're getting out of there, like, at all. And everything looks terrible and doomy and glum and terrible, but there's just something, I don't know if hopeful is the right word, but just, they're still there after 2 years, and I don't know, maybe there's just, like, a confidence that they have, like, gathered over the time, and yeah, it's just terrible right now, but we have to try, at least, and, like, make it through somehow.
It's almost the message of the episode, like, Taela telling Ronan, as long as we're still breathing, there's still hope. So, I feel like that's sort of, in a way, kind of what Elizabeth is saying at the end of the episode, or sort of echoes that sentiment.
I love that.
I agree. I love that last scene so much. The circle shot around, unfortunately, I was like, this might be one of the rare, if not the only time, we have a scene with, like, the whole team. Elizabeth plus Zelenka and Carson and Caldwell. And, like, I love team shots so much. Like, I love the team shots of, like, just the, you know, John, Taylor, Ronan, Rodney. But I love when the whole team gets in on it. And it's so sad that we don't see them enough, especially like Zelenka and Carson. I feel like they should always be included in these little meetings and in these little iconic shots. But they're not. So I appreciate that we get at least this one. But speaking of, we can jump back actually and discuss that beautiful line. Oh my gosh, the Taela and Ronan B plot. I love it, and then I have beef with it.
So interesting. Let's talk about the stuff first. Okay.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just always gonna happen with me, I think. But I love that scene. Like, just the writing in that one scene was just great, where Ronan goes, I'm not good at waiting around to die. And Taylor goes, yeah, as long as we breathe, there's hope. And then later again, as, like, you know, they switch where Taylor's feeling a little more pessimistic and Ronan flips it on her and says the same line. That's just my family. That's my family. I don't know what to say. Those are my besties. Like, so, so, so good. And I just love their dynamic so much. And I just feel like they have a really natural friend chemistry that just, like, translates through the screen, where you, like, you know they're friends, and, like, in their little, like, you know, glances, you know, as they're, like, making fun of Rodney, or, you know, just, like, making little faces in the back, like, they just feel so natural, and I just love them and that writing, I will say, so much.
Yeah, I felt like the Ronan and Taela friendship really, really, really came through in this episode, like, from the start. Like, there's this first scene, I think, and they're kind of like, they're following, like, Rodney and John's conversations. It's like they're watching, like, a ping pong game and just, like, going back and forth and just, like, rolling their eyes in the background, and, like, oh my god, these boys, they literally can't get anything done. I feel sometimes when there's a woman around. So I loved it, like, from the beginning, and then it only got better. And yeah, the scene that you just mentioned, Sam, it's so beautiful how they keep giving each other, like, hope and, like, trying to pick the other up emotionally, and how they yeah, just help each other through this. And then in the end, when they are safe and they're in the Daedalus, and there's this like, everyone is okay. And there's like this shot of them and Ronan is smiling and Taylor looks so relieved. It's so sweet. It's so fucking sweet. I can't with them. They're just, yeah, beautiful. And everything about them is like perfect, I feel like, in this episode, especially.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Ronan's little chuckle, like, on the Daedalus will stay with me till I die. It's such a sweet moment. And I don't know, even just the shot of them sitting back to back with, like, the ash falling from the sky. And, oh, man, there's just something about them. Like you said, Ash, when one of them falters or doesn't have the strength to do what they need to do or to go on, the other one is there, and it's just such a nice, balanced relationship of give and take, and they're just so, they're always so wonderful and a delight. Like, whenever the camera pans to them, in this episode and in all episodes, it's always a treat. The silent communication, it's the best.
I will say, oh, here comes
here it is.
Her negativity. Oh, no.
Oh, no. No.
I've come to disrupt the party. No, I'm kidding. Once Taylor and Ronan get to the village, amazing. Tens all across the board. I really, you know, they're dynamic, they're perfect, blah, 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 blah. But I do still feel like, you know, like in the beginning, I wanted more from them. I guess it was something I was praising Elizabeth for this episode, right? Where I feel like they let her personality show more when she was delivering sometimes, like, some of these, like, very, like, you know, just generic lines that just needed to be said. And so I just wish sometimes that translated a little more with Taylor and Ronan. Like, it just, sometimes, especially in that beginning, it just didn't feel like they had their own voice, right? They're just saying, like, oh, what's that? Or, like, oh, who's that? You know, or something like that, where I feel like I wish they had been given, like, free rein to just sort of, like, you know, just maybe not act as what, you know, their character would do in that situation, but just maybe, like, change a few words, you know, so it sounds more of like how Taylor would ask the question or how Ronan would ask the question, you know? And I feel like it's just like these little things that you could do to sort of spice it up a little more, especially in that beginning. But like, again, once they get to the village, like, I love all that. And like their B-plot actually turns into something, yeah, very interesting and very connected in a way that I just don't think, you know, just doesn't happen like that most of the time. But I think this is definitely one of their better ones. And their chemistry and relationship, like, also carries it through as well. Just in the beginning, I was like, don't like that. Because McShep was kind of getting all of the, you know, like, the funny lines. And they were just kind of standing there, like, little sidekicks. And I was like, slight beef. But still high praise for what, you know, how they transformed it later on.
Yeah, I noticed that in the beginning, they were more like, that's a bit harsh. A little bit like props and like saying the lines that needed to be said, asking the questions that needed to be said, adding sometimes explanations. But you're totally right that it wasn't. They said it because it was necessary and not because it was necessary for the plot, but it didn't really do anything for the character, if that makes sense. And I agree.
The one thing I will say is that I appreciate what their job was in this episode, like being the boots on the ground people, like actually going out and interacting with the Trannians and like doing the really like self-sacrificial and hard job of like the physically taxing going in and rescuing these people. Like that was awesome, because I feel like a lot of the time as the leader of the group, John usually gets, like, the plot where he's, like, sacrificing himself for other people. So I like to see that they get the emotional heart of the episode for once. That was nice.
Yeah, and I think it kind of also made sense in the way that they are from Pegasus. Despite everything that the team has gone through by now, they still have, like, a certain feel about, like, Pegasus and about people. They have interacted with different people from Pegasus and kind of, like, even if they hadn't encountered people in like this specific situation, they kind of, yeah, I feel like they just have a feel about how to handle these things and knowing what's at stake right now and acting accordingly, going to talk to people who don't want to listen to them and don't want to come with them, and like, but then I think they even let them go because they realize, okay, we can't, it, there's no use. I thought it was very fitting as well.
Yeah, and I was gonna mention too, because Tor mentioned it, that like John is like more of like the leader role, right? I did really appreciate one thing in the beginning that I felt like Taylor kind of stood out, was when, I forget exactly what the lines were, but John was sort of talking to the old guy and it was just like not going well. And so he kind of like turns to Taylor and she kind of steps in to like correct him and like save the day. And I was just like, oh, there it is. Need more of that. Because I don't, you know, like John's the leader, I guess, like, maybe not like in the military sense, but just like in the, he is a leader, yes. But I just feel like Taylor is also the leader. Like, I just feel like they're sort of like dual leaders, kind of. Like, all of them are sort of like leaders in their own way, but I just feel like Taylor should take the point in these situations. And she did early on, remember, like, when the episode that comes to mind is the one, Childhood End, right? That's the one where she kind of steps in and like takes the lead because John's just kind of like just so taken aback and doesn't really know how to navigate the situation. So anytime where like Taylor gets to step in and like literally again show that she's a leader and like show that she's good at like negotiating and like navigating these like tense situations is like a 10 out of 10 in my book. And it was so tiny, but I was like, you know what, I'll take the crumbs, I will take them and eat them up gladly.
Absolutely. And going back to them being Pegasus people, and when the people, the Tyrannians, were having a hard time wrapping their head around what the volcano was going to do to their continent, I just feel like Taylor and Ronan were the right choice for that conversation, because what they were saying was not condescending. You know, and I feel like if it was Rodney in that situation, it would have been a very different sort of conversation. So, yeah, I appreciated that was where they were at, and they were the ones in that scene. And I also wanted to mention just about the special bond that Taylor and Ronan have. The fact that Ronan went out to go rescue another family while Taylor stayed behind, and she waited for him to come back before trying to make their way back to the ship together. And that's why she was stuck on the planet with him. Like, she could have been safe on the ship, like, or underground with John and Rodney, but she chose to wait for him. And so that was really special, too. And it says a lot about who Taylor is as a person and the type of bond that they have.
Yeah, we leave no man behind.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one last thing about Taylor and Ronan that also kind of has to do with Rodney. I just thought that Rodney asking after them was really cute, too. He was like, oh, what about Ronan and Taylor? I just love seeing their friendship and connection as teammates as well, because I feel like John's presence is very overshadowing or kind of like overpowers everybody else's relationships. So it was nice to see Rodney asking about them.
Yeah, like, just all of the team moments in general were so great. And all of sort of, like, the smaller dynamics were great as well. Yeah, like, John worrying after them was cute. But again, like, Rodney's face, too, when Carson's just like, we don't know what happened. And Rodney's just like, oh, okay. And he just, like, keeps moving on because, like, he just has to. But you just see, like, how devastating he looks for a few seconds. And it's just like, ah, his, like, besties, too. Like, don't forget it. Yeah, I'll probably say a lot more of, like, the little stuff later with Taylor and, like, Ronan. But I do want to mention one thing before we jump. But, again, some of their expressions in the background just had me cracking up. Of course, an iconic scene of them just, like, giggling while McShepard just fully, basically, like, slap each other with words, just like in the middle of the room, just fully having like an old married couple fight, and they're just like, yeah, we have to put up with them. Hilarious. But one of my favorites There's two from Taylor, especially. I was just dying. I was like, Rachel, you're freaking mind. You comedic genius. So it's when they're walking down the hallway and they're being told what a volcano is. And Taylor's face, after the first tremor, is hilarious. She is appalled. She is in shock. She is like, what the fuck was that? She hates it. And I just know she would hate California. She's so funny for that. My queen. And again, another funny shot is when Carson is speaking his, like, Scottish, or, like, you know, he's using his Scottish slang, and she just goes, what? And again, shocked, appalled, in horror. She's just like, oh, what did you just say? And he has to, like, correct himself. Amazing. Amazing. Some of my favorite Taylor expressions ever, I think. Well, should we transition to... Okay, let me just say, while I'm being super giddy about this, we have not had, not to be like a little spoiled McShep brat, but we have not had McShep in quite a while. We've been living on crumbs, okay? And this episode delivered feast upon feast, okay? We lived like kings. I feel like this is such an underrated McShep episode. People don't talk about this episode because it has everything. They're fighting every 2 seconds. They're married. They're divorced. They're having their first date. They're holding hands. They're kissing. They hate each other. It's they're soulmates. It's everything you could want, and everything about their relationship is just on display here. It's like I just kept writing down, like, holy shit, like the McShep feast we're eating. And I just kept writing down, like, I need this gift. I need this part gift. I need more people to talk about this scene. Like, it was so good. So good.
Yeah, I mean, I always love John's, like, assurance. His faith in Rodney's abilities. Like, he just knows that Rodney's gonna get it done. And his means of supporting that is always really hilarious to watch. I say supporting it in huge quotations. Very sarcastic quotations. But even just the beginning when John is like, oh, Rodney can fix that. Or no, he's like, we can fix that. And then Rodney's like, yeah, by we, you mean me. And then immediately snaps the laptop off his back, and like the Velcro sound, the comedic timing of that was hilarious. First of all, the fact that Rodney has his laptop attached to his ass with Velcro when he's off world, it's just too much. And the whole, oh, it was just, it was great.
I need, can someone write a fic about how that happened? What occurred to where they had to Velcro a tablet to his ass? Like, please let me know what your headcanons are, because there's a plenty. And who did it? Who? Someone who was like, fucking enough, and just grabbed his pants out of, like, the dryer and just, like, threw down some Velcro straps. Like, I, you know what? I'm going to put money on Zelenka. Zelenka had enough.
I was going to say, maybe, like, Rodney fumbled important equipment too many times. Like, he lost the laptop in a lake. He dropped it down a hill. I don't know, while they're running away from something. And so Zelenko's like, stop wasting department resources, and then got the Velcro because he'd had enough.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I was like, he doesn't seem like a person who, like, loses stuff, like, because he forgets where he put it, at least to me. I feel like he always knows where his equipment is. But that he loses it, like, on a mission when he's, like, yeah, running away from something. Yeah, I can definitely see that happening. Or him, like, being startled, or, like, just scared, or whatever. Yes. Yeah. I accept that headcanon.
It's very much one of those, like, leashes for children. That's what it's giving.
Exactly, that's the
line. I feel like they would give Ronan the leash, though. Ronan, not to, Ash's face got so crazy. This is not sexual. Put your mind in the gutter. No. This was a cute little thing. Don't make this weird.
That is,
like, this is very on brand for me, but Yeah. No, I'll shut up now.
Anyone has any recs, hit us up. Okay. So
please.
Speaking of leashes, so John and Rodney and their dick measuring competition, huh? Let's talk about that. So that was my only thing. I was like, ugh, they're so annoying. They're such men. Yes, they were definitely a little annoying in the beginning. I was like, leave that poor ass woman alone. She did not give a shit, to be honest. Like, I was so happy they didn't make her like a love interest or someone who was just like only like into Rodney or like and then turned to John or something. Like, I'm happy it was just like she was just a very gorgeous woman in a beautiful dress, might I add. Love that costume. Who loves science. She just didn't. She was just here to learn. And I, you know what? I'll take what I can get from this Atlantis writing team. Thank you. Finally.
Yeah, I think this whole, she called dick measuring contest. Yeah. I think that was like the one thing that annoyed the shit out of me in this episode, because I was like, enough already. Okay, we get it. You both think you have a crush or whatever. Or you think you have to show that you're attracted to this very, yeah, attractive woman. But stop it, please. You're just annoying, you're embarrassing yourself, you're not annoying everyone around you. Just let the woman be, let her be interested in like science and learning stuff and learning new things and just but yeah, now that you mention it, I didn't really like it, didn't really compute to me that way, but it's true, she doesn't really, like, she couldn't care less about them. Which is nice for once.
Yeah. That was sort of like the only thing that like didn't, again, it's like little things that I have complaints with, which again is fair. Like, obviously not everything is perfect. Like, we'll just take, you know, the early 2000s, like weird misogyny, whatever. But after that, like after those like first few uncomfortable minutes, I just feel like all of their like jokes worked so well. I feel like, honestly, I feel like all of them hit after like a certain point. Like, I was just cracking up. Again, just so many underrated makeshift lines. What is that? Okay, there was that one where Rodney was snapping at John about the military. Or he was, because John was suggesting like the whole drone thing, and Rodney was like, ugh, like you're just so military, blah blah blah. It comes back into play and John goes, time for this military solution. And he like, he genuinely took that to heart, what Rodney said. He like, he remembered, and he comes in like, time for the military solution. Like, he was not having it. I was cracking up.
I also really enjoyed, John was like talking like Rodney when he was on the call with Elizabeth. He was like, there's like scientists on this planet, or people who call themselves scientists. It's like so condescending to Elizabeth. And I was like, that's something Rodney would say. Like, why are you saying this? It was too much. I kind of like the idea that sometimes Rodney says things that John is thinking. Because I feel like inside of John, there is a huge nerd who is also really obnoxious. And Rodney's just mean like, girl. Yeah, the personification of that.
That's why they're like, that's why they're besties. Like, they try, you know, they see, like, oh, like, opposite track. Like, oh, they're so different. No, they're fucking not. John just hides it better. And Rodney just hides his, like, nicer side. So, like, there you go. They're, like, basically the same person, kind of. Just hiding different things about themselves that the other can see. But, oh, my God. And I love that they finally acknowledged that Rodney can just fucking work miracles and pull, like, saves out of his ass. If you threaten his life, basically, and the lives of his team, he will do whatever you want. Like, that's the way. And, like, everyone exploits it. You know, they mentioned that in Condemned, which is an episode we bring up a little too often for my taste, weirdly enough. But that's another conversation. But, yeah, in Condemned, they do the same thing, and it worked. And I just love that, like, they've sort of acknowledged it and that they keep doing it. And I just love... I love John's, like, little threatening Rodney. And Rodney knows that he's just bullshitting him. And he also knows, like, he's not entirely bullshitting. And it is true. They are all relying on him. And it fucking works. It works every goddamn time.
What I found so kind of endearing about that in the end after he tells them the plan. First, he forgets to tell them the plan because he was just like 10 steps ahead of them. But then they kind of figure out, so, okay, this is actually a good plan. And they tell him that it's a good plan. And he seems so taken aback and so surprised. I was like, oh my God, he's still not used to getting, like, he always praises him, his own, like, capabilities and everything. And he always says, oh, he's the best and, like, Nobel Prize and everything. But he somehow doesn't expect it to hear from others, like, sincerely and without having to, like, wrench it out of them, basically. But they just, like, they acknowledge that he is doing a good job and that he has good ideas. But he's still not, like, entirely, like, he seems so surprised.
It's so fun. Like, it's so fun to see. It's really terrible sounding out of context, but it's fun to see his insecurity a little bit, because I feel like most of the time when we see Rodney's insecurity, it's in an obnoxious way, like he's masking for whatever. But in this case, when they compliment him, then he's like, starts worrying a little bit about his plan. He's like, oh, like, I don't know, it's probably not going to work. And then when they actually successfully launch themselves using the blast, he's like holding onto the console, like, I can't believe that just worked. So it's just very sweet to see that part of him, for sure.
So, so freaking cute. Just, great scenes. I just wanted to mention, clearly John has been reading and studying the How to Handle Rodney McKay handbook. He mastered it this episode. He knew when to ask the right questions. He knew when to just back off and let Rodney work. He knew when to fucking rush him and he's like, you're taking too long, hurry up. He freaking mastered it. What was that one? Oh my gosh, yes, this one. What, like, beefing when he's like, when Rodney's like working and he's like, no, and John's just like, oh, I hate when he does that. No notes.
Yeah.
10 out of 10.
I love that it speaks to, like, the history between them. Like, there's been so many missions where this has happened. And that whole line, like, Rodney being like, oh, talk amongst yourselves, is just so cute, too. He was very squishable this episode. And by squishable, I mean endearing.
He was. Our little toaster.
Yes. Very brave little toaster this episode. Even John using Zelenka as a Rodney management tool, so like threatening to get Zelenka to come and replace him on the mission, put a fire under Rodney's ass to actually do work. It was so good.
So good. And again, it's just such a testament to David Hewlett, I think, and of course Joe Flanagan. I think, I mean, all the actors did great this episode. I also want to shout out Tori as well. Tori did great as Elizabeth, and just like capturing those fake funny moments and also, you know, the serious ones. And obviously Joe is just so great at like physical comedy as well, and like just his expressions are just so on point for John. It's just great. But of course I think David Hewlett is just on another level. I think he's the glue. He's like everything that makes the show work, I think. And again, he can give you everything from dramatic, you know, to sad, to angry, to comedic. Like, he's so good. And I just love all of his little expressions and the way he can turn them on so quickly. And I just feel like when he's at his best, I feel like the show is at its best as well. They're working in parallel. They're great.
Yeah, even the non-spoken moments, like when he bends his fingernail back when he's working under the console. And I don't know if this was David's choice or not, but it was hilarious. Like, him deciding that it was going to be his middle finger and then holding it up and being like, oh, can you see? Can you see what's wrong with it? And, like, that was peak. That was so good. And the banter, like, the speed with which they work against each other, like,
literally so good. And I feel like, no, I think they get, you know, they get their flowers quite often, you know. I don't think the show would work for, you know, if it wasn't for them. But I also feel like the show would crumble if one of them left. Like, you can't have, you know, one without the other. Like, they are, not to just be a McShep shipper, but just, like, in general, like, McShep is, like, you know, like, they just work so well together. And I just, like, throughout the core of the show. And it just wouldn't work if one of them left. And so, yeah, they just have such a great chemistry. Like, you know, for two, like, actors that, like, you know, probably, you know, I don't think they did, like, chemistry reads for, like, these parts. Like, they just threw them together. And just to have, like, that lightning in a bottle, as Tara would put it, type of chemistry is so, so, so fun. And even, like, Carson, when that scene, you know, when the scene where they're explaining the plan and Carson also, like, throws, you know, a few words out there as well, like, even he got to, like, shine as well and got to, like, you know, I think he fit well with them. Like, it was, like, a fun scene.
I think you're right. And I think, in a weird way, they balance each other with John and Rodney because they have such strong personalities, I'm going to say. Or they can come off as kind of obnoxious on their own, I think. But together, it's more fun than it is obnoxious, if that makes sense. So, like, their quirks become quirks instead of things that are annoying about them. Like, even them fighting over the girl was more quirky than annoying most of the time because of them playing off each other. So, like, you know, like, Joe's eye roll at Rodney's, like, terrible innuendo. But he's not just rolling his eyes. Like, he's rolling his entire head with his eyes. Stuff like that is just so, it's so great.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of hard to talk about this episode sometimes as, like, or digging into, like, singular, like, solo characters, right? Because there's, you know, they're so paired off, right? Like, Taylor and Ronan are paired off in this scene, and, like, you know, they have a lot of their scenes together, and then, like, McShep have a lot of their scenes together with, like, Carson kind of rotating in between as well. And, like, Elizabeth is sort of the only one that has, like, her own moment, kind of. So there's not really a lot to talk about there, but I do want to say, of course, I have to bring this up. The iconic, the infamous, dare I say, scene of John and his little shrug. I forgive you, baby girl. War crimes? What are those? I don't know who that is. Oh my gosh. That little 2-second little shrug. Men would go to war for that face when he's doing that little shrug. Women would go to war for that face. I would start a revolution if he needed to. Like, that little shrug, that's my, like, 30-something-year-old baby man. I love him. Yeah, that was it.
I wasn't sure where that was going, but I'm glad it went there.
It was as dramatic as I am, so.
And I can't move on without mentioning the nerdery that was occurring when they were trying to name the ship. That was a great scene, too. It was so funny when Rodney's like, oh, we get to name a ship because it has a terrible name. Let's name it. And then John's like, we're not naming it the Enterprise. And Rodney's like, I wasn't going to say the Enterprise, but for my second choice. And it's like, obviously, you're going to pick the Enterprise, you big nerd. But John's choice of a spaceship name, yeah, it was even more nerdery because it was actually, I found out when I was doing research for this episode, a reference to an old German science fiction show from, like, 1966. What was it called? It was called Space Patrol, The Fantastic Adventures of the Spaceship Orion. So he is even worse then Rodney trying to reference Star Trek. He just had to do, like, a deeper cut. A more cult classic.
I did not pick that up. I was like, why Orion? But when you started talking about, like, oh, that old German show, I was like, oh, hell no. Oh. Which rabbit hole did he go down? Like, he knows that show. Which, by the way, side note, aired at the same time as Star Trek, the original series.
Ah. But
feels like 10 to 20 years older.
Oh.
It's, I watched it all. I watched like the first episode or so, and then I kind of like just out of curiosity. But yeah, it's funny because at that time, like parts of TV was still shot in black and white, and then others was in color. And like if you compare Star Trek and Space Patrol Orion, then yeah, Star Trek is in color, Space Patrol is black and white, and just there are a few things that just like set it apart so much. And yeah, maybe I should watch it because like yeah, it is like kind of infamous, I feel like. but yeah. Wow. You fucking nerd, John. You fucking nerd.
You pretentious nerd. Like, he's that bitch that watches, like, you know, black and white movies and, like, loves the classics and, like, will low-key be a little judgy if you roll up and say, like, Mean Girls is my favorite movie. Like, he's a little rat. He's a little rich boy. But I wanted to say, I'm so happy you brought that scene up, Tor, because I was cracking the fuck up. Once again, I love this running joke. I feel like it's such a subtle running joke that, like, we just never really talk about that often, but it's so funny. The ancients suck at naming things. The Hippophoralcus? Are you shitting? And then everybody trying to explain it, like, oh, it was an old general or something, and, like, everyone's just like, we're not naming it that. And again, I love that it's John, once again, saving the day. He said jumping puddles. He said the puddle jumper. You know, I forget what else he did. I feel like he did one more. And then now the Orion. And I was like, that is so cute. Get me on the Orion. And side note, the interior is also so freaking cute. Like, I'm just obsessed with the Orion, actually.
Also, I don't know why, but when they were talking about the names and was like, oh, we're not calling it the Enterprise, which is also, by the way, funny because in SG-1, there's a very similar scene where they're talking about it and Sam's like talking to Jack. It's like, we can't call it the Enterprise. We can't. Why not? Legal reasons. I mean, we can't. but when he said, oh, we're not calling it the Enterprise, I was like, oh, they should name it the Millennium Falcon. And I don't know why I thought that. But maybe because it's like kind of an old ship and kind of beat up. I was like, maybe. But yeah, copyright and such.
That would have been so cute. Oh, actually, I guess we should talk. Well, we kind of talked about it already, but yeah, Wraith ship is coming. We just all did thumbs up signs. Yeah, I think that's all we have to say on that.
I guess we could talk a little bit about the ancients' decision to build this thing on top of an active volcano and how smart that was. Yeah. So when they were discussing that, I was like, okay. Rodney was trying to justify it, and he was like, yeah, you know, like, they're harnessing the geothermal energy, they don't have to use a ZPM. I was like, okay, these points, you're making points. But then he was like, yeah, like, it's a dormant volcano, but it will only become active, like, every thousands or hundred thousands of years. It's still gonna become active again. So, there's still a danger there of building on top of the volcano. And also, you have such a sensitive piece of equipment, the Stargate, located right smack in the middle of the volcano, where, like, you don't know, fissures could open up, geysers could destroy, like, that's hot and could potentially destroy the Stargate. We saw it destroy the Stargate. So yeah, I just thought that was an interesting, like, cool, environmentally friendly choice. But also not great either.
Yeah, it's weird that the ancients of all people were making that choice, because we kind of know that they lived for a very long time and like their civilization was going on for thousands of years. And even if like this super volcano only becomes active every 50,000 years, they had that, like, they knew that, they were planning. I feel like they should have been, like, planning ahead, or I feel like they did, but for some reason in that case they were like, yeah, it's gonna be fine, which is idiotic. What happened? What the fuck?
Oh, the ancients. I can't even psychoanalyze them anymore. They just confuse and bug the hell out of me. Because is it really worth building a base and, like, having, like, other people... Well, I don't know if other people settled on it. Maybe it was just, like, a research base. But whatever. Even just having a research base there so you don't have to use a ZPM. When you know what's going to blow up eventually. Like, is it really worth it? Like, how stingy were y'all on the ZPMs? Just use your little 3 ZPMs per little outpost. Like... They did it in the fucking tower, and that place was ugly as hell. So, like, why not just make your own little outpost again and just use your 3 little ZPMs? Like, they're a little bit silly for wasting or for just building it there. Also, okay, maybe this, I guess, was smart, you know, just in case of emergency, they needed to go out of there, so they had their warship there. But that was an Aurora class. Wasn't that, like, the ship? That's, like, the warship. You guys were dying. In a war, in a siege. Where did that ship... Why did they just, like, keep it there? What was the plan here, guys? Also, like, how did they... Did they all evacuate and then go back to the city and they just left their little warship underground? Like, there's a lot of questions here. What happened? Did everyone just fall into the volcano one day by accident? Yeah, I'm trying not to think about it too hard. Because I feel like if you think about it too hard, you're just going to run into a wall. So I'm just going to pretend... yeah, they all forgot that they had a warship there. And they all evacuated and they left it behind. Or they fell into lava. I don't know. Either one. Worse for me. Which, okay, reminds me. Side note. But I was going to say, I feel like the CGI actually kind of popped off this episode. I think it was actually really well done.
Yeah, with the volcano, and the ship, the explosions. Yeah, the gate destruction scene was really cool. And the implications of it as well. Like, imagine lava actually, like, got through to the gate room. Like, what? That's crazy.
See, this is why... This is another rant coming. Like, oh my god, I hate the design of the Atlantis base sometimes. Like, it just pisses me off. Because this is why you have your gate outside. Not inside. Because look, what happened to their gate? Like, the lava came and their whole gate fell down and then they were screwed. But no, the Atlantis has their gate room smack in the middle, inside. So that's why everyone, you know, it gets blown up how many times? Like, they always have to shut it down. They're like, shut down the shield! Like, none of this would... There's just no need. Let's just have it outside in, like, a cute little area, and then you can walk up. So it's gonna be so fucking nerdy. But it's giving, like, in Minecraft. Okay? Walk with me. Walk with me here. Walk with me. Listen, hear me out. I've been watching a lot of Minecraft videos lately, which is something... Okay, sorry, this is a random side note. I mean, who wasn't into Minecraft when they were, like, 14? Okay, I was. I was a lot. Yeah, we all were. Everyone raised their hands, so I'm not the only one. Yeah.
I wasn't.
Okay. Okay. I thought you raised your hand. So don't.
I thought you phrased the question the other way around.
Oh, okay. Well, Ash, no one heard that. We're going to cut that out. Ash definitely was into Minecraft at 14. No, I'm kidding. But anyways, no, I won't lie on her name. But anyways, we were all, I was 14 when that happened. Minecraft was, anyways, okay. So. I've been watching some Minecraft videos lately. And I kind of want to play again, but that's a side note. In Minecraft, for those people who aren't total fucking nerds, there's something called... Oh yeah, who aren't cool. Thank you, Tor. There is something called the Nether Realm. So you can go into the Nether, and you have to, like, build this little block or whatever. You have to, like, harvest the blocks. You have to put them together. And it's super fucking dangerous. Everyone knows, do not have that in your house. Because sometimes monsters will come through. And, like, in the middle of the night, you're going to be sleeping, and you're going to get whacked in the face and dead. So, like, everyone knows it. Don't do that. It's like, don't keep a lava room in your house if you have your house made out of wood. Because, obviously, your house is going to blow up. Or your house is going to go into flames. So, it's just, like, common sense, ancients. This is your big base. And you have a portal that other things can crawl into in the center. of your base on water. It's not even like a little tiny base, like, you know, where land right there. No, it's like 20,000 stories high. So it, when it like blows up, everyone's just gonna go flying out and die on impact in the water. So like these architects, I have beef with these ancient architects. Come at me. Let's have a discussion, argument.
The shield is a thing, but you have to be aware for it to be, you know, a thing, because you have to turn it on or turn it off. And, like, also I understand that the Atlantis itself was supposed to be a ship, so they wanted the gate to be, like, on the ship so it was moving. Fine.
Also, I feel like the gate, like, obviously the ancients were just super pretentious, but I feel like the shield came after the gate. So they had the gate built beautifully inside Atlantis, the heart of Atlantis. And then maybe after like the third, fourth, fifth time that like lava flooded into the gate room, or I don't know, some fucking spider came through, or like the debris of like a chopper exploded just outside the gate, they were like, maybe we should do something about that. Maybe we could put the gate outside to like one of the piers, or we keep it inside because it's pretty and below shield. But I don't know how many resources they probably like use to like build a shield instead of just like putting it like outside.
I'm crying. Now I'm just picturing them being like, let's just build it outside. And then someone being like, but do we want to walk? And then that was it. Then they moved on. They're like, you're right. You got us there. Like, no one was like, escalator or like elevator or like, oh, we have ships. Like, no, everyone was just like, you know what? That's a lot of walking. Let's just keep it close.
Worth the risk.
I was going to say, though, actually, I have a question for the gang. Does this episode qualify as a Daedalus Ex Machina episode?
Now, my thoughts on this are a little bit complicated, because I feel like the Daedalus got to the planet way too fast. Like, it was, like, right there. And so I was like, okay, that was convenient. However, I did appreciate that they took into consideration the fact that the Daedalus is a ship that has finite resources and cannot carry, like, a whole planet full of people away at once. So that was cool. Like, I did like the fact that they were trying to cripple the Daedalus a little bit in order to give the episode stakes, and it made, like, reasonable, logical sense. However, there is a bit of fan discussion about the Daedalus in this episode and the fact that Caldwell could have potentially beamed people to a further site away from the blast, like another continent on the planet, to buy them more time while they were making these trips, so they wouldn't be in like where all the toxic gas was and all the air pollution and like in the blast radius and all that stuff while they were working on a solution, which is true, but ruins the tension of the episode. And also, you don't really know what's on the other continent. Like, I feel like that wasn't clear. Like, they weren't in contact with the people on the other side of the planet because they didn't really care. They weren't like, oh, what about the other people on the planet? Because the whole planet was going to be unlivable after this volcano went off. So it could have been potentially unsafe because they didn't know, like, the fauna that was on that side of the planet. So I get why that wasn't really a consideration, but still.
So I wrote down at some point, Daedalus, our beloved Deus Ex Machina, and I was like, actually, is that true? Like, the same question that you asked, basically. Because the Daedalus is helping, but in the end, she's not saving the day. it's still the team and Rodney who figure out a solution to save, like, the remaining people. Another thing I just realized that kind of confused me in the beginning is, yes, Daedalus showed up way too early and then left, and it said it takes 12 hours to get back and forth. And I did not get the feeling of the time passing in the episode. So I think the Daedalus did it do two trips or just one or three? I'm not sure. But I think it was because they were planning to go back and forth several times, and I didn't get the feeling, like, I knew it was happening, but it didn't feel like all the time was passing on the planet. It felt more like it was just a few hours and they were just, like, scrambling to, like, figure everything out. So there was something that threw me off a little bit, but I could live with it.
Yeah, that's so fair. I do have to say, I feel like we have to eat our words a little bit. Me especially. Because in the beginning of the season, you know, we were not looking forward to having the Daedalus this season. You know, I especially was just really unhappy with it being introduced so early and just sort of the ability to go back to Earth being introduced so early. I just feel like, I don't know, just it really did suck a lot of the tension out. And I stand by that. However, I will say they have done a good job of making the Daedalus not feel overbearing. It does feel like they step in to help and not necessarily save the day all the time. I think they've only saved the day like twice, maybe. Besides that, they've kind of just been more of like a shuttle, honestly, to like carry the team to like their missions or like, yeah, ferry people out of the way into like, you know, safety. Yeah, so I still don't like that the Daedalus is here. And I still feel like if the Daedalus was here, it should have been they were just here stuck in the Pegasus Galaxy, you know, and then that would make more, it's just like, it's literally such a small change. All they have to say is literally just like, oh yeah, we don't have enough energy and enough ZPM energy to go back, so we're stuck here. And they could have just, everything would have stayed exactly the same, except there's more of that tension where they still can't contact Earth if they need help. But yeah, I will say the Daedalus hasn't been that overbearing, and I do appreciate that they've tried to write it, you know, not as like the savior all the time, more of just like an extension of like little helper to the team, just another weapon basically to sort of in their arsenal, which works for me, and I think it works well for the series right now. I was also gonna mention though, I was just cracking up at how Atlantis is so nice this time around. The Atlantis team, they're being so nice. Like, they just showed up to, like, help, you know, out of their little free will because someone was like, help us, our little volcano is going active. So the team was like, let me go sit, like, see what I can do. They brought Rodney. They brought all their superstars out to go impress. And then they're like, oh, no, it's going to blow up. You guys can come stay at our place. Like, don't worry about it. Free of charge. And it just was cracking me up. They were so nice in the beginning, and people still didn't trust them. And, like, these people didn't even know anything, like, have not heard about their reputation or nothing. And they were just like, keep an eye, watch them, be on guard. I don't trust these guys. Just made me crack up, because I was like, I wonder, like, if I was, like, in the team at that moment, if they ever felt like, you know what? Like, fuck this. Like, everyone hates us when we go in nicely. You know, they still distrust us. Like, fuck it. We're just going to go in and, you know, be all, like, colonizer, supervillain Atlantis. Because maybe that could have been their villain origin story. Another little thing I wanted to mention really quick. I am so happy, again, his little cameo, that Hermioid made his reappearance. But I was going to ask, is that the last time we see Hermione? I'm trying to remember if he shows up in season 3. I'm not sure. Obviously, but I think by season 5, he's not there. Maybe season 3 he's there, because that's like sort of the last season with like Asgard, right? But yeah, he's nice whenever he pops up for those 2 seconds.
Yeah, I just looked it up and he's in the next episode, I think. So he's in the next 2-parter, and he's also in McKay and Mrs. Miller.
There's a little delay there. But no, it's perfect. At least we get like another, not season, but a few episodes of him.
Yeah. I was sad that we didn't see Novak Because they always have such a fun dynamic, and it was sad that she was on this mission. I was like, maybe she's on vacation or something, just on the mainland chilling, or I don't know, back home visiting family or something. But I wish she'd been there, but maybe it would have been too much comedy for this episode if she was there.
Yeah, and I was gonna say, my last little note I think I have is shout out Zelenka. Again, he's not really in this episode that much, but just again, his presence is much appreciated. And I remembered, because I wanted to actually ask Ash about this, maybe she can explain it on air, putting her on the spot. No, well, they have a really cute scene. There's a cute scene with Chuck and Zelenka. And so I wanted to ask, because I don't know if you guys knew this, Ash is a Chuck and Zelenka shipper. So
Yeah. It's so funny that you mentioned that, because yeah, I was also happy to say, so wait, two things. So first thing, yes, I was also happy to see Zelenka, and I love that the long range sensors are kind of his thing, because I think, like, I feel like he's the one who monitors them and who keeps people updated, and so I really like that he says, like, besides everything and like probably picking up a lot of slack of Rodney's or like whatever, he has like his own little like corner of Atlantis where he's like in charge, and that's his thing, so I like that. And yeah, there's like 2 or 10 seconds with him and Chuck as well. It's really funny that I think that perhaps Zelenka and Chuck are the only ship, like, slash ship that of like men that I actually actively ship. Like, I have like a lot of like ships in law, kind of like McShep and like Spurk and all of them, like Garrosheer. Yes, I mean, you can't not ship them. It's like they're right there, right? So, but like, I don't really actively ship them, and with them it's just like, I don't know, it happened like a few months ago or even longer, last year or the year before that, and someone was sending me like ship asks on Tumblr, and one of them was like about Chuck and Zelenka, and was like, hold on, wait a minute, they're actually kind of cute. And a whole thing kind of spawned from there, was like getting deeper and deeper into it. And I was like, they would be so perfect for each other. They also have like, of course they have much, much less time and like way more in the background, but they also have like their banter going on, and like they're in a date room, and just like, yeah, it's just, it's really nice to see them together. And like, yeah.
You know what? Fair. Fair. I see it. I get the vision. It's the classic sunshine grumpy, I feel like.
Yes.
It works so well. I mean, you can't go wrong.
Yeah.
You literally can't go wrong with that dynamic. And you're right. They bond over computer stuff. Like, the gate room is sort of like their place.
Gossip. I feel like they would gossip so much, because like Chuck is always in the gate room. He sees everything. He knows who's coming, who's going. He sees Elizabeth and like her office all the time, the people going there and leaving, and I feel like he would be like gossip central. And then Zelenka, of course, has his bar, where I assume a lot of stuff is also happening, so they kind of like, they get together all the time and just like dish about like stuff that is happening in Atlantis.
That is so cute.
Yeah. Did we? I don't actually remember if I came up with that or if we came up with that here on the pod, but did they have a podcast or like a radio show or something?
The radio show.
Yeah.
The radio show. Yeah, I think it was them. It was in the podcast, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what they fell in love.
Probably, yeah.
Sure. Like, all their friends kind of set them up. We're like, oh my god, they're just always talking. And then they're like, oh, you guys should create, like, a news, you know, broadcast thing. Elizabeth was the one who was like, oh, you know, you guys should, like, we need, like, someone to, like, read the, you know, all the news and stuff in the morning. And, like, you two should do it. You can see him, like, okay. And then
Elizabeth, you. The matchmaker.
She's like, I need to marry some more people. She's like, who do I need to pair up? She's like, I haven't hit my quota yet. People are getting married on this base. She's like, I'm going to go in.
Queer people.
Yeah. Anyways, after that very long random tangent, I think we need to head over to Ash for the Bechdel test.
No, we don't. yeah, no, this episode does not pass. Big fail.
Yeah.
No comment. No further comment.
Yeah. We have to, I was going to ask. And with that lovely note, we head over to Tor for the behind the scenes.
Okay. I found some interesting stuff about this episode. The first was a quote from script coordinator Alex Levine. He used to have a blog on sci-fi.com. And he wrote a little story about how Tyrannus, the planet that we visited this episode, got its name. So I thought I would share. Carl, as in Carl Binder, was trying to name a planet for an upcoming episode called Inferno, and he came up with the name Mollen. I could see where that was coming from. The story is about a fiery planet with lots of volcanoes, so perhaps he was going for a mixture of the words volcano and magma, or something like that. Well, Mollen got vetoed pretty quickly in the writer's room, so a little frustrated, Carl went back to the drawing board. Then he came up with Makara, but the problem with that name is it brings to mind Dakara, which is the Jaffa home city, not to mention it sounds like macaroon. When I asked Carl if they make yummy cookies there, he wheeled on me and I feared for my safety. Just a little bit. I always thought Carl was a mild-mannered guy, but rumor has it he may have accosted the security guard at his hotel at the start of the season. Bottom line, you gotta be very cautious with these sci-fi writers, especially when they're on a deadline. P.S. Carl just came into my office a happy camper. He's going to name the planet Tyrannus after the Gaelic god of thunder. Uh-oh. Now Damien's worried it sounds too much like Tyrannosaurus, as in Tyrannosaurus Rex. Or maybe it's too close to Tehran, the capital of Iran. See, it's not as easy as you think.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because I had the exact same thoughts, like, about Tyrannosaurus Rex, and I thought, like, it sounds a little bit like Terran, if you say it very quickly, what you sometimes call, like, humans from Earth. So, yeah. Interesting that they stuck with that one, though.
Yeah, I feel like it is too close to Terra, like, Tyrannus. It still has, like, that sound. But I guess it just goes to show you how difficult it is to come up with, like, a unique name for each place. And that's why some planets that we visit are just never named or just have, like, a designation because they could not be bothered to come up with an actual place name. What else do we got? Let's see. Though largely identical to its sister ship, the Aurora, seen in Season 2, Episode Aurora, the Orion's Bridge featured several seats of the type used on puddle jumpers, whereas the Aurora had only one chair for the captain. And apparently director Peter DeLuise wanted more of these chairs so that the rest of the team, when we have the inner shot of the Orion, could actually, like, sit instead of standing around awkwardly, which makes sense. And the majority, this one's really interesting, the majority of the Tyrannus Outpost set is a redress of a set from Blade Trinity. Like, the Blade movies. The third one, it's the same for real.
What? Oh, that is so interesting. Because I thought you were going to say, like, oh, yeah, that's just, like, a redress of, like, you know, the tower or some SG-1. Because I was like, okay, yeah, like, this looks like, you know, Atlantis and stuff. But what, an actual movie? What?
Yeah, so I guess they must have filmed that stuff in Vancouver. Whatever was filmed on that set for Blade. Which is crazy. What else do we got? Yes, the actors. So, Kevin McNulty, who plays the Chancellor, Chancellor Lysis, I think is his name, also appeared in the movie Super Volcano as the Secretary of Homeland Security, who had to deal with a super eruption of the Yellowstone National Park Super Volcano, which Rodney makes an allusion to in the episode. So they got the actor to come and play the dude.
That is so funny. I love that.
I a lot of Atlantis episodes are like parodies or references to a lot of movies. I just love that it's like now they're just taking B-movies and plots of B-movies and then making it for Atlantis. It's just so good. A little bit of history here. There was a competition in 2005 called Get in the Gate, where if you won, you were able to go and be like an extra on set for both SGA and SG-1. So the winner, Nancy Martin, appears in this episode as a Turanian. And she also plays Murek's wife in the SG-1 episode Camelot, which aired the week after this episode aired.
I'm trying so hard to remember.
No,
coming to me, but that is so cool.
That's really fun. They don't do stuff like that anymore, which I feel like they should.
Absolutely. Like, yeah, they should.
I wonder what she had to do, like, to win. Like, if it was, like... So I didn't really look up the competition. I wonder what it was. But moving along, Brandy Ledford, who played Nerina, previously played Zarin in the SG-1 episode Endgame. And she's also known for playing the android Dale on Andromeda. And she worked with David Hewlett, who was Rodney, of course, in the 2004 movie Iceman, which I've never seen. I've seen a lot of David Hewlett's movies, but I've never seen Iceman, so maybe I should.
So fun, though. I love that they have sort of like a connection already. Also, I do love the... You know, we have, like, crossovers with Andromeda for some random reason. There's, like, quite a few. The biggest one, obviously, being Michael Shanks was on that show, and that's where he met his wife.
Cute. And I think the last actor is Patrick Gallagher, who played Vonos, who was the dude who went off to die very stupidly after arguing with Teyla and Ronan. He previously played Baal's Jaffa Commander in Stargate SG-1 episode Abyss. Yeah, and that's all I've got for behind the scenes this episode, because in every language, the episode's name was just Inferno. They didn't change it at all.
And I guess we have to go back to you, right, for the fanfic corner. Sorry, we're just throwing it back to Tor all the time.
I guess I'll go first, and then we'll throw it to Ash for her contribution, her spicy contribution this week. So, for this one, I kind of wanted to just do a straight-up episode tag for Inferno, because it was a fun episode. And I found this fic called The Miracle Worker, which we mentioned, by HTH. And it's actually a Rodney Ronan fic, where it's basically just about Ronan thinking Rodney is actually pretty cool for being able to work scientific miracles when situations are really dire. So if you're interested, check it out. It's cute. I like it.
Should I go?
Absolutely. And I'll throw it back to you, Ash.
Thank you. Yeah, when I watched this episode, I was like, hold on. I wish that I read a fanfic with like the episode tag like 5 years ago when I started to think that Elizabeth isn't straight, and I looked up like everything with Elizabeth that was not straight. The fic that I want to write is called The Pure Sex of It, and it's by Chelfic on AO3, and it's femslash, it's E-rated, it's very basically the only tag is porn, so it's basically porn without plot. And it's Elizabeth. It's about Elizabeth and Norina, and basically, the summary is Elizabeth gets the girl at least for a night. And if you're like me and you were a little bit annoyed by like the whole John and Rodney competing about the girl, this is perfect because, yeah, what if you get, instead you get horny Elizabeth flirting and doing other things with a very attractive woman.
The perfect response to this episode. Absolutely excellent.
I feel like this is, again, very on brand for me. Anyways.
Perfect. Thank you so much. Again, both of those will be linked in the description. And if you're looking for all of our recommendations, be sure to check out the Google link form that we have in our
Linktree.
There you go. Forgot the word. I've not said that in so long. Let's go to the polls really quick. For this poll, which was the one from Coup d'etat, which was the yellow shades, hot, not, or a secret third thing, we had 16 votes for hot. We had 10 votes for not. 10 is a lot. Everyone, you were not feeling the glasses. And then we had 5 votes for a secret third thing.
Oh, I wanted to know what everyone's secret third thing was. I want to know. You guys got to say, what is the secret third thing?
Because I thought they were hot. I love that. I was like, I don't know. I'm surprised a lot of people didn't find them attractive. Maybe they were too goofy.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe they don't like the goof factor.
I think they look silly.
Maybe the secret third thing is it's like funny or it's like cute.
Yeah.
So it's not hot. It's just like a different emotion.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
I'm like, keep the glasses on, baby.
What is going on today?
Leashes and glasses and all this stuff. I don't know.
And porn fix. Like, it's just really...
The horny episode.
No, we've had hornier episodes.
That's true.
It's been a while since we've had a horny episode. Because we've been too angry at the plot.
No time for porn.
I know. Ratings.
Smart. So, I'm giving this episode a 9 out of 10. Because I think I mentioned it all before, but like, I really liked the tension, like the overall tension of this episode. I thought it was really, really cool. I liked like the little lead up to like that it serves like for the next episode, like into leading us first gently into the season finale. I love that it was like, I felt like this episode actually showed off like the ensemble cast that we have by giving us so many character and great character moments, maybe not all individual but like paired off and blah blah, blah. It's very silly at times, which I enjoyed, and the only thing that, which is why it's not 10 but 9, is the whole dick measuring thing, which just, to me, it wasn't really funny. It was like, not even, it was annoying in the beginning, and then it continued to annoy me, and this is why we have fan fiction.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with your rating and say a 9 out of 10 also, for the same reasons, but the only reason that I'm, well, one of the reasons I'm detracting a point from the episode is because I feel like the whole, a hive ship was coming and we found an ancient warship at the same time was like too close together. And I think they should have separated those two plot points, or made it seem less like it was like too good to be true to happen in the same span of time. So for that, because I couldn't suspend my disbelief enough for that, it's a 9 out of 10.
Valid.
Trying to think. Because, do I give it a 9 as well? Or do I give it a 9.5?
Ooh.
That's the question. I don't know. Because I think The only reason why I mark it off points is for what I actually mentioned about the Taela and Ronan part. That annoyed me more than anything. It was sort of just, like Ash said, they were just props in the beginning. I think there were some funny moments, but it was just because, like, the actors were sort of just being their charming selves. But I wish there was more effort put into their lines. Just as much, you know, there's effort put into Rodney's lines. There's efforts put into John's lines. Even when they're exposition-y or whatever, there's effort put there. So I would like that same effort to be put for the other members of our team. So I think, just fuck it. For unity's sake, I'll go 9. But I just wanted to say, this is what the tower tried. This is what tower, get the fuck out of here. Tower, erased from our existence permanently. But this, just perfect, amazing. Everything they wanted to do, but like 10 times better. I would honestly, it's going to be so hard to rank some of these episodes because I think it's just as good as Aurora. I think it's very similar to Aurora in sort of like, the pairings matching up. Although I do think Aurora is more of like the four of them are kind of more together and the mixup kind of split off. Well, this one is kind of immediately, they're just like split off kind of. But yeah, love this episode so much. It's so underrated, I think. And I really hope that more people will get into this episode after we reviewed it, maybe. I don't know, like maybe just showing some light on how good it is will get people talking about this episode more, because I think it deserves it.
I love that we all have the same rating, but we all have different reasons for the rating.
Yeah, we're continuing our streak. We'll see if we can maintain it for our next episode, which I don't remember anything about, so that shall be interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Be sure to check out all of our socials and everything linked down in the description box below. You can check out our fic racks, and you can also follow our personal socials to see what fandoms we are currently into. And be sure to get ready for the next episode, which is the season 2 finale. We have finally made it after like a year and a few months. We are here. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, you clowns, listen up. I don't often get a chance to say this, so savor it. Good work, boys and girls.
Let's go home.